Dan Shulman joins us on the line right now. Dan, thanks for doing this.
Well, congratulations on that news. That's exciting.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, the due date is on Monday, so the first kid came a day before the due date. So if this one arrives on Sunday, I'll probably take a couple of days off, but I'll be back on the Thursday. What's reasonable, do you think, after having a child? How many days to take off work?
You know what? There is no good answer that I can give on the radio to that question without getting in trouble. So I think you got to make that decision on your own. But listen, you know, it depends on how much help you have at home and how everybody's feeling. And, you know, there's a lot going on there. But, you know, you don't get it back. So family first, right?
I don't have any kids, but Ben never asked me. And I feel like this is a little slighted. I don't know if I should.
Oh, I never asked you how many days I should take off?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, you would probably be like, I mean, once the kid's born, what else can you do?
Right. What are you going to do?
Well, be there, supportive.
Yeah, that's a mistake. Yeah, that's the wrong answer.
thank you.
Well, he's desperately hoping to be there for the home opener.
I really want to be there.
But
you're right. Yeah.
What he's looking for is someone to say, yeah, go to the game. That's what he's looking for. So, 100%. But he's not getting it here. So, yeah.
I want to tell my wife. Well, Dan Shulman said it was fine that he returned to work.
Edit this so that it says, like, we can edit it basically whatever.
No. Oh, we wouldn't do that to Dan.
You know, I believe the game's actually on television and radio too. I understand that. It's from people, so I think you'll be able to check it out one way or the other.
I know I'll be able to watch the game, but it's the whole being down there will be kind of the de facto extended pregame show, 1 to 3, whatever. I can't control it. Just rolling with the punches here, Dan. Hopefully it works out for everybody. All right, so lots of Blue Jays questions. Of course, we're getting down to the final stages of the Grapefruit League campaign. But I know you've seen a bunch of the former Cardinals that are on this Blue Jays team because they were seemingly always on Sunday Night Baseball, them and the Cubs. That's one of the better rivalries in all of sports. But, Randall Grichuk, Aledmys Diaz, Sungwon Oh, who's going to apparently make his spring debut today, got his work visa. Who do you think has the opportunity to make the biggest impact on this Blue Jays team of the three former Cardinals?
Well, Jaime Garcia, former Cardinals, although he went to a couple of different teams more recently, but he spent a long time with the Cardinals. So I think out of the gate it might be Diaz if he's going to be the everyday shortstop, but I think the guy with the highest ceiling here is Grichuk. Now, as I'm sure you guys have discussed, Grichuk has light tower power, but there's a lot of swing and miss in his game. Now, he's also getting a late start here because of the rib cage thing, although it sounds like that's gone better the last couple of days. So, listen, he's moving to a division with better parks in which to hit. He knows that. He's done some different things in the off season to try to, correct his propensity for going out of the zone, chasing breaking balls and that sort of thing. If he can find it, and listen, Jose Bautista found it. Edwin Encarnacion found it. And Grichuk's younger than those two guys were when they found it. I'm not saying he's going to turn into one of those guys, but he's got a lot of potential. So I think he's got a chance to really do well. And I like Jaime Garcia. He's got to stay healthy, but if he can give him 28 to 30 starts, he's a ground ball guy. He's really tough to hit. He doesn't give up a lot of hits. If he can stay healthy, keep the ball down, I think he's going to be really important. And I haven't done the math, but if we go back and look at all the guys who started games for the Blue Jays last year, who weren't in the plan, who weren't supposed to start games, I mean, the team's record in those games had to be, dismal, right? So a healthy Jaime Garcia, in my opinion, alleviates that.
I guess the knock on Randall Grichuk or the pushback from some fans, though, is that we just saw a season where Kevin Pillar was doing all that talking about, I'm going to draw more walks. I'm going to try to get on base a little bit more. I'm going to be a little bit more selective at the plate. And it just didn't really turn out. And we've asked people this quite a bit, which is, do you think that that's something that can be learned with Randall Grichuk? Or are you just saying that it's maybe just he improves on those power numbers? Because when we hear he got a pitching machine and that's going to help him draw walks, it seems a little dubious.
Yeah, well, with him, I don't think it's so much about drawing walks. I think it's about if you don't chase the pitches outside the zone, then they have to come into the zone. And if they come into the zone, he can do damage. I don't think Randall Grichuk, and I haven't seen every comment that he's made, but I don't think Randall Grichuk is going to base his success this year on walks. And you know, we all know the importance of getting on base percentage, that sort of thing. But I think for him, it's more about forcing them back into the zone, getting into a hitter's count, forcing them into the zone and doing damage. Like, this is a damage guy. Randall Grichuk and Kevin Pillar are two very different players. So, you know, I mean, you're right. Pillar has said it. It's worked for a few weeks here, a few weeks there. Then he's kind of, you know, gone back to the level that he's been at for most of his career. Grichuk's you know, he's still a pretty young player, and he's new, and we haven't even seen him healthy yet, really. And I just think he's got a chance to put up some good numbers. I'm not saying he, again, I want to repeat, I'm not saying he's going to turn into Bautista or Encarnacion. What I'm saying is I think he's got a chance to be a little bit better than he was in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he can hit 250, 260, 25 to 30 homers, steal a few bases, run the bases well, and play a pretty good right field, that's a pretty good baseball player, I think. Yeah. So I think that's something the Blue Jays could use.
Yeah, I mean, the power is there. I think the isolated power has been better than Mark Trumbo, so maybe that 47-homer season is in him, and he plays defense as well. So, yeah, I mean, that seems like the upside for a Randall Grichuk. But you mentioned Kevin Pillar. What are your Kevin Pillar thoughts? Because I think we know the defense is spectacular, and he plays on this team despite the OPS around 700 because the defense is spectacular, second or third best center fielder in the American League on the defensive side of things. But yes, offensively, he's been a bit challenged, and we know that the Blue Jays have some intriguing depth in the outfield. Anthony Alford is hurt at the moment, but man, I'm interested to see what he does at the major leagues at some point. Where is the leash with Kevin Pillar, do you think?
I think it depends on two things, how Pillar performs and how Alford does, because you're right. I think they'd like to see what they're going to get from Alford. And Pillar just hit arbitration this past off season. So he got the raise from whatever he was, $560,000 or $580,000, just above minimum. And I think he's up 2.53 somewhere in there. If he has exactly the same year he had last year, he'll get a raise again. It's just the way the system works. And it's, you know, with every player on the roster, you know, Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, they look at how much value, how much money. It's just the way it is. So I think this is a very big year for Kevin Pillar. And I talked to him a few days ago when I was down in Dunedin, and he said all he's thinking about this year is hitting the ball hard up the middle. He's not worried about homers, not worried about doubles. Just hitting the ball hard up the middle. So using the big part of the park and seeing what happens. So, you know, as we said before, he's had stretches for 3-4 weeks where he's been great, but then he's always come back to where he's been before. So I think you got to kind of take a wait and see approach. We've seen about 3 years of it, and it's not impossible for him to change. And I think one difference this year, unless I'm way off base, I don't think there's any discussion about him hitting at the top of the order. It'll be Granderson or Travis or Martin maybe hitting second against lefties or something. I think they're going to say to Kevin Pillar, whether it's 7, 8, or 9, you're down there, and let's see how it goes.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. Even actually, when you first said that, when you said there's no debate where he's hitting, I was like, wait, are you advocating he should be at the top? Like,
No, we've done that.
We've done that. That's over now. So we've actually spent the last couple of days discussing some Marcus Stroman comments again. And we love him because he provides us content on radio, which is super important. Like, we do 3 hours a day. And when Marcus Stroman says things, we thank him for it. We're big Marcus Stroman guys. But I do wonder if you think that he's clearly a polarizing athlete. I was saying the other day that I think people have already made up their minds on how they feel about Marcus Stroman as soon as you hear the words Marcus Stroman said or Marcus Stroman tweeted, that you're already either someone who's doing an eye roll or a fist pump. But this latest one was kind of interesting because he mentioned that he thinks that Vlad Jr. And Bo Bichette could help them now. And I think most people all agree that it's okay for those guys to start the season double A and not be with the Blue Jays right out of camp. But it does present a more interesting in terms of, I've never really thought his comments are too corrosive to his teammates, but this is one where I think that you're looking at potentially taking away two roster spots from two guys if that's the way he feels. And I wonder if you think that there's any element of his latest comments that maybe rub guys the wrong way in the clubhouse.
I think it's possible, although, you know, this conversation could be a rabbit hole we go down and we don't get out of by the end of the segment. But
ready.
So Vlad Guerrero right now plays third base. We all know who the Blue Jay third baseman is. I don't think Josh Donaldson is going to be offended by it because I think Josh Donaldson knows he's one of the best players on the team. You know, it could trickle into other areas where even guys who don't play the positions that Guerrero and Bichette are playing say, well, did he mean that Vlad should play there and this guy can DH more and then I don't have a, you know, like what if Kendrys Morales took, I have no idea. I have no idea who took offense, but I think for, I'm not sure that Marcus Stroman meant any ill will towards current teammates when he said that. In fact, I'm pretty sure that he didn't. But, you know, part of what makes Marcus Stroman is he's going to think and say and do whatever he wants to just about the entire time. And remember earlier in the offseason, he tweeted something out and then he deleted it and apologized.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you're going to have these every now and again. But that's the same part of his DNA that makes this 5'8", 180-pound guy come back from an ACL quicker. And that's the same part of his DNA that makes him believe he's the best pitcher in the world no matter how many people told him you're not big enough to be a success. So I think if you're going to get the Stroman that's going to be out there throwing 200 innings and getting some Cy Young votes and battling his tail off and hitting an opposite field home run when he gets to come up and hit, like if you're going to get that guy, this guy's part of the package too. It's just, can you temper it within reason? You're never going to be able to completely take it away. And nor do I think you should ever want to completely take it away. But I think every now and again, and Marcus, this is, listen, he's not the first athlete, who has said something or whatever. And every now and again, you just want, maybe they talk to him and say, hey, we get where you were coming from and we understand the intent was good, but consider the other side. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I have no idea. I didn't see any comments from management about that. So I know this one really, you know, rattled some cages, but I didn't think it was as bothersome maybe as some other people did. And it doesn't make any sense right now for Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero to be on the Blue Jays right now. It just doesn't make sense. It's, you want to maximize what you're going to get out of them over 6 or 7 years until they hit free agency. Spots aren't really open. The team may or may not be a contender. Listen, if these guys go to Double-A and tear it up and finish the year at Triple-A and do well, then this is, I think, a very legitimate conversation for next year. But the Blue Jays, in many, many ways, could be in a much different spot next year than they are right now.
You think Stroman's reached, like that season last year with the ERA of 3.09, eighth in American League Cy Young Award voting, is that his peak, or is there more to go for Marcus Stroman, in your opinion?
I mean, 3.09 ERA in the American League East. Yeah. Think about that. You know, so, if the number crunchers had it that and put him in another division, put him in the National League, you know, it's a sub-3 ERA. 200 innings, a gold glove, and 3.09 ERA. I don't know if it's his ceiling, but I do know it was a hell of a year. Like, not a good year. It was a hell of a year that he had last year, and the Blue Jays would sign up for that 8 days a week. Now, Marcus, again, because he's Marcus, he wants more, and that's what makes him good. That's what makes him as good as he's been last year. He's always tinkering, arm angles, hesitation, you know, stuff like that, and so he's always looking for a little bit more. But I think because the team didn't do as well as people wanted them to do last year, I think how good his year was actually was a bit overlooked.
Yeah, he was spectacular. Really, really, really good. How's your bracket look?
Oh, demolished.
Yeah.
Demolished. I have two of the final four of my final four still in, but unfortunately the two I had going to the championship game are long gone. I had Michigan State over Virginia, so like a lot of people did. And you know, it's funny, I was looking at the eight games that are going to happen tomorrow and Friday, and there is not one of those eight where if the so-called underdog won, I would be shocked, because this year, I mean, I was shocked a couple times in the first couple rounds, don't get me wrong. And obviously, if I knew what I was talking about, my bracket wouldn't be busted already. But, you know, this was a year where there were no great teams, and there were more losses in the top 5, top 10, top 25 than there have ever been before. And so you knew it was going to be chaos. You just, you know, you guess on the upsets, and you either guess right or you guess wrong. So if I had to pick one team that I think is in the best shape right now, it's Villanova. But, like, who knows? I mean, there are very few surprises the rest of the way for me, I think. And you know, if Syracuse beat Duke after what they've done already, okay. If Loyola Chicago won another game, okay. After Clemson demolished Auburn, if they beat Kansas, that wouldn't surprise me at all. And this is why we love it. It's one game, single elimination. So this is the fun of it.
Yeah, I kick myself every year over my bracket. I'm the type of person who in his brain is like, yes, of course, no one gets a perfect bracket. But deep in my brain, I'm like, this is the time. you're going to be the one. It's going to happen for you, JD. And it's totally destroyed bracket. But I'm kicking myself because what you said there about everyone saying this year feels more open than ever and there's no great teams. And still, I was a little too chalky. And now I'm just living with so much regret. How do you feel about, before we let you go, we just got to get your thought quickly on Gilgeous Alexander, because Kentucky looks pretty well set up to go on a bit of a run. And I got to admit, considering the hype that we've had around really big Canadian players over the last couple of years, and just considering, like, comparing him to, say, Jamal Murray, I don't even think it's close in terms of the hype he's had, especially here north of the border. And I wonder how good you think this guy can be and if he's good enough to carry Kentucky to a title.
Well, I don't know if he's good enough to carry them to a title, but I think he's good enough to be the best player on their team. So he originally committed, unless my memory's playing tricks on me, he originally committed to Florida. And then he had an AU tournament or something between his junior and senior years, and he blew up, and he opened his commitment, and he opened his recruiting again because he was getting bigger and bigger offers, and he went to Kentucky. Coming into the season, a guy named Kevin Knox was, like, hands down, supposed to be their best player. And every now and again, he is. But their best player over the course of most of the season, and by far their most important player, is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. 6'6", from Hamilton. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but watch him with the ball. If he wants to get somewhere, he gets there. He draws the defense. He dishes. He can make open shots, but he doesn't look for shots that much. He's great at getting to the rim and getting into the lane and then kicking out to shooters. I think he's going to come out and go into the NBA. I think he's going to leave after 1 year, as a lot of Kentucky kids do. And I'm not sure he's a top 10 pick, but I think he's, 14 to 18. I think he's, maybe at the back end of the lottery. I love him. Really, really, really love him. A good defensive player, too. He's got good length. So Kentucky's playing by far their best basketball that they've played all year. They were really like a bit of a soap opera on the court for 4 months. John Calipari tried a different thing with them every single week. Nothing was working. And then all of a sudden in the SEC tournament, they put it together. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, they've beaten a 12 and they've beaten a 13. So they've had somewhat of an easy run. Kansas State is a bunch of tough SOBs. They have that. The whole team has that Marcus Stroman chip on their shoulder, and they're going to come at Kentucky and, figuratively speaking, try to punch them in the mouth right at the beginning of the game. So I'm interested to see how all the freshmen react, because K-State's, they may not be the most talented team in the world, but they've got that perennial little brother to Kansas thing going on. And when you play K-State, you feel it afterwards. I think it's going to be a great game.